Are you talking about the budget or are you talking about truth?
Truth. Well, we are very close to Shavuos. I'm hesitant to say just how close for fear of compromising my Omer count this evening, but we're pretty much there. But nonetheless, as they say, 24 hours is a long time in politics, and certainly in terms of preparation for Matan Torah, time well spent, for sure. I'd like to devote our remarks this evening, therefore, to Chag HaShavuos, and to begin by spending some moments considering one of the unique aspects of Shavuos in the Torah. Most of what for us is unique about Shavuos are matters of minhag, very well established minhag, in terms of Torah mitzvahs of the day. We don't seem to have that much. I mean, we know it is the day that the Torah was given. But in terms of mitzvahs to do, we seem to be lacking the equivalent of the lulav and the matzah. And yet, in terms of the Beis HaMikdash, which is the way that things should be, there is a feature of Shavuos which is very distinctive. It is a korban which is brought only on Shavuos, and that is the Shtei Alechem. As the Pasuk tells us in Parshas Emor, Mimoshvo Seichem, Taviyu, Lechem Tenufa, Shtayim, Shtei Esronim. Known to us in English as the Shtei Alechem, that is to say, the two loaves of bread that were brought in conjunction, as a korban, on Shavuos. The first thing that's unique, and it's if you've never not familiar with this, then it's interesting that it is unique, is that these are the only korban in the Beis HaMikdash that must be there that are chametz. As we know, many korbanos are accompanied by menachos, by meal offerings. There's the lechem aponim every week. All of those are matzah. They are kosher lePesach. In the Beis HaMikdash, it is practically Pesach the whole year round. In fact, there is an entire sugya in the Gemara devoted to the question as to whether you can use leftover menachos for Seder night, because you know that they're kosher. What they're missing is the intent to be used for Seder night, which is l'shem mitzvahs matzah, because there's so many other things that you could use matzah for in the Beis HaMikdash. Lo seyofeh chametz, that is the rule in the Beis HaMikdash. Chametz is not allowed. It's a chametz-free zone. And the exception to that is shtei alechem on Shavuos. So les tihiyena chametz teyofena. And they already, therefore, carving out for themselves a unique niche within the Beis HaMikdash. The shtei alechem are from chametz. Another very interesting feature of the shtei alechem is that they come together with korbanos, that is to say, with animals of korbanos. And this alone is not something that we are strangers to, as we know. Very often you have a combination of korbanos from the animal world together with, from the vegetable world, korbanos and menachos and nesachim. What's unique, however, about this combination is that this is the only time that the mincha, that is to say, the meal offering, is the ikar. And it's specifically the animals which are the accessory, which are the accompaniment. Normally, we understand that it's the animal that's the ikar. And about the everything else, we say, umin chasam, viniskehem, and their accompanying meal offerings, the accompanying wine offerings. When it comes to the shtei alechem, they are not an accompaniment. They are accompanied by the other animals. And that actually reverberates halachically. Because were it to be the case, if we could imagine a scenario, and of course the Talmud needs to imagine all scenarios, that there were no animals available, would one still bring the shtei alechem? Under other circumstances, why would you bring the mincha if you haven't actually bought the korban, if you haven't bought the ikar? When it comes to Shavuos, the answer is absolutely yes. Even if for some reason our animals are unavailable, they do not hold up the bringing of the shtei alechem itself, because that's the ikar. However, by contrast, if you could imagine that you could not bring the Shtei Alechem for some reason, you would not bring any of the animals because they are accompanying the Shtei Alechem. If the Ikar is absent, you do not bring the accompaniment. So there is a reversal of primacy in terms of the Mincha vis-a-vis the animal. And what's very interesting is, came across, mentioned this afternoon, because we see how the world of Dikduk and the world of Halacha, how they coalesce. The Torah says in Parshas Emor, Mimoshvo Seichem, Taviu Lechem Tanufa. Now the word Taviu in the Torah is spelt the way you'd imagine it to be spelt. But what's unique about it is that there is a dogish in the Aleph. Right? One of those dots in the Aleph. And grammatically, it is entirely unnecessary for it to be there. And moreover, the word Taviu appears a number of other times in the Torah without the dogish. So what are we to make of this? Of this dot. When we see dots in the Torah, it's a good sign, but we need to know what to make of it. And Rav Hirsch explains that as surely as in the world of grammar, when there's a dot in a word, it's to lay emphasis on that word, or the emphasis on that part of the word, lehavdil, as we would say, lehadgish, it's called a dogish. A dogish is emphasis. So too, the word taviu contains within it a dogish for emphasis, to emphasize the Shtei Alechem. That is to say, it lays emphasis on the bringing of the Shtei Alechem, regardless of whether or not there are animals to accompany them. And that, as we said, is in contrast to all other situations where you would never bring the mincha without the animals, because the mincha itself is the accompaniment. And thus we find a fascinating thing. What begins as a vocalized emphasis is an expression of a halachic emphasis that come what may the Shtei Alechem are brought. Furthermore, and as we move closer to the halachas of the Shtei Alechem, it is referred to by the Torah as Mincha Chadasha. V'ikravtem Mincha Chadasha Lashem. And the meaning of Mincha Chadasha is this is the first of the korbanos that is brought from the new crop of the year, from wheat, that is to say, the omer has been brought from barley, but in terms of the new crop of the year, this is the first mincha that is brought. And in fact, so much so, that Rashi explains in Parshas Bamidbar, when Shavuos, which has a number of names in the Torah, it's called Chag HaKatzir, it's called Chag HaShavuos, and it's also called Yom HaBikurim. And why is it called Yom HaBikurim? Well, we might think the answer is obvious. It's called Yom HaBikurim because it's from Shavuos that you can actually bring Bikurim. And in fact, in one place, Rashi does say that. But in Parshas Pinchas, when the Torah refers to Shavuos as Yom HaBikurim, Rashi says it's called the day of Bikurim because it is the day that you bring the first mincha from the new crop of that year. That's the Bikurim of Yom HaBikurim. So actually, the Shtei Alechem, not surprisingly, but important to note, come to characterize the entire day. The day is called Yom HaBikurim, after the Shtei Alechem that is brought. And we should realize that actually what is happening inside the Beis HaMikdash is parallel to something that happens outside. Namely, there are two korbanos. There is the korban Omer, of which we are well aware, and then you have the Shtei Alechem. And what's very interesting to note is that they both have a parallel effect. One is outside the Mikdash and one is inside. Namely, prior to the bringing of the Omer on the second day of Pesach, so new food, or food from the new crop, that is to say, Chadosh, as we know it, cannot be eaten by anyone. Once the Omer has been brought, then Chadosh can be eaten. And therefore the bringing of the Omer has the effect of being Matir Chadosh, to be eaten. That's well known. What's perhaps not so well known is that there is a parallel development in the Beis HaMikdash in terms of whether the new food, new crop can be used for korbanos, mincha specifically, in the Beis HaMikdash. And before Shavuos, no. Shavuos has the effect of allowing you to use flour from the new crop for korbanos in the Beis HaMikdash. So you have this inside-outside relationship. Outside the point of transition is the Omer. Inside the point of transition is Shavuos. but the effect is largely the same. What the Korban Omer does to the outside world, the Shtei Alechem do to the inside world of the Beis HaMikdash. However, as much as the effect seems roughly parallel, we should be aware that there is a fundamental difference between the way that these two transitions work, the Omer for the world in general and the Shtei Alechem for the Beis HaMikdash. And it comes out in a very interesting halacha. What happens if a person would use from the new crop for a korban, for a mincha accompanying a korban? Would the korban be valid? The halacha, you'll be pleased to hear, as is to be found in the Talmud, Maseches Menachos, Daf Samaches, is that if it's before the Omer has been brought, so it's possible, it's invalid. If it's after the Omer, you still shouldn't do it, as we have said, you shouldn't do it till Shavuos. But if you did, the korban is kosher, b'di'evet. Now, this is a rather uncomfortable situation to be in, because, and in fact the Talmud enunciates this question, why should the status of a korban be affected by the Omer? Either way you look at it, it's still osur to bring before Shavuos. So the fact that the Omer has had an effect on the world at large, but why should that in any way impact on the status of the korban? If it's possible from Chadash before, because Shavuos hasn't happened, it should be possible from Chadash afterwards, until Shavuos. So how did it become mollified or mitigated by the Omer? How did that affect life inside the Beis HaMikdash? That is actually the question that the Talmud raises. And the Svasemes, in his Perush to Maseches Menachos there, steps in to explain everything. And it's fascinating because if we're familiar with the halachas, it will open them up. We have stated, and it's true, that the Omer is to the outside world what Shtei Alechem is to the Beis HaMikdash. Namely, before the Omer, you're not allowed to eat. No one is allowed to eat from Chadash. And before Shavuos, no one is allowed to bring a korban from Chadash. In one sentence, that is the synopsis of what we've said. However, says the Svasemes, as true as it is that there is a certain parallel between them, but they are not the same at all. The nature of the prohibition in each case is not the same. And the reason is very simple. When it comes to the Omer, we say, before one has brought the korban Omer, you cannot eat from Chadash. How do we know this? Where is it derived from? The answer is, it's explicit in the Pasuk. The Torah says in Parshas Emor, Ve'lechem, ve'kali, ve'chamel, which is a reference to Chodosh, lo tochlu, ad etzem hayom hazeh, ad haviachem es omer hatunufa. So the Torah has stated, black on white, that you cannot eat from the new crop until you bring the korban omer. And that's why you can't do it. Now when it comes to the Shtei Alechem, and we are again resonating and we say that in the Beis HaMikdash you can't use anything from the new crop before Shavuos, well, where does that derive from? Is there a pasuk which says, V'lechem v'kali v'chamel lo takrivu until Shavuos? There is no such parallel pasuk. The Torah never forbids it. Well, if the Torah never forbids it, then why can't you do it? The reason why, says the Svasemes, is because the Torah states, with regards to the Shtei Alechem, stipulates that it needs to be Mincha Chadasha. Mincha Chadasha means this is the first thing you bring. Because the Torah stipulated in a positive way that the Shtei Alechem on Shavuos needs to be the first, therefore, by implication, nothing else can come before that, because that will stop the Shtei Alechem from being the first. And therefore, in the interest of the Shtei Alechem answering to the description of and fulfilling the mitzvah of being the Mincha Chadasha, that is why you're not allowed to use any Chadash prior to the Shtei Alechem. That's what it's all about. But we understand that there is no overt prohibition per se to use Chadash in the Beis HaMikdash. It is, to use the phrase advisedly, purely an issue of safeguarding the fact that on Shavuos it will be a Mincha Chadasha. The consequence is you can't do anything else before that from Chadash. And just to further bring out the point, the Svasemes suggests as a possibility that let's say one Shlemazel, so he brought before the Shtei Alechem, he brought from Kadosh as a korban. So what will we say? He's ruined everything now. It is possible that from that point on, there would be no objection to them using Chodosh, even if it's 2 weeks to Shavuos, because there is no prohibition per se. It's only in order to ensure that the Shtei Alechem on Shavuos will be the Mincha Chodosh. Once that's no longer possible, because it's already been ruined by one person, so then it could be that there is no prohibition from that point on until Shavuos. In any case, as we get closer to a resolution of our issue, the Sfasemis explains as follows. If we realize the background to these two prohibitions, so let's remind ourselves of one thing. If a korban is brought from food that cannot be eaten by the Jewish people, so the korban is possible. It has to be what's called Mimashke Yisrael. Mashke Yisrael means food that's kosher. If you brought food that's not kosher as a korban, so then it's possible. If that's true, says the Sfasemes, I think we'll understand everything. That is why the Omer mitigates in terms of the kashrus of an offering from Chodosh inside the Beis HaMikdash. The halacha was, as we said, that if it's before the Omer, such a korban is possible. If it's after the Omer, b'dievet, it's okay. And our question was, how did the Omer change things? The answer is, the Omer changed things because it made that food edible for people. Prior to the Omer, if the food is halachically inedible, so the korban is possible. And that's why the halacha is the korban is possible. Once the Omer has happened, so the food is mutter to eat for people, and therefore it is edible. It remains true that one should not bring it before Shavuos. But that is not a prohibition. That is a function of the obligation that the Shtei Alechem on Shavuos are the Mincha Chadasha. But that would not render it disqualified. The problem would be in the Shtei Alechem, they would no longer be Mincha Chadasha, but it isn't a disqualification within that Mincha that was brought from Chodosh prior to Shavuos. And thus, says the Sfasemis, if we understand as close as they seem to be, as parallel as they seem to be to each other in form, but in substance they're very different, the effect of Omer on food generally and Shavuos on Shtei Alechem. So, Shtei Alechem on the Mikdash. So these are some observations with regards to the Shtei Alechem, and of course, if there is a concept of learning about the halachos of Chag B'Chag, the Shtei Alechem is the korban of Shavuos. Certainly, there's great merit in trying to get a further insight into some of the halachos of the Shtei Alechem. We should know that nowadays, temporarily, we do not have the Shtei Alechem, we don't have the Beis HaMikdash, but there is a zecher to the Shtei Alechem, and many people are not aware of it. There is a widespread minhag, it's probably universal, I think, for some people it defines the chag, which is a discussion all on its own, of eating milchiks on Shavuos. I mean, that's what it's about. Shavuos is the time that we eat milchiks. It is also a time for other things, but it is a time where we eat milchiks. For those that are not used to doing this sort of thing on Yom Tov, it really is quite a trauma. And why is it that we eat milchiks on Shavuos? There's many reasons that are given, and there's room for more than one reason, Kedarka Shel Torah. But what's fascinating is the approach of the Ramah in the Shulchan Aruch to this question is decidedly different. In that, as far as the Ramah is concerned, the reason why we eat milchiks on Shavuos has nothing to do with milk. Got to do with the Shtei Halechem. How did my Indian milk eat the Shtei Halechem? How does the two configure? Says Ramah, if you know your halachas of Basar B'Chalav, you will know that whereas after you've eaten meat, you have to wait however long it is for milk, between milk and meat, that is to say, if you had the milk first, you don't have to wait. You just need to take certain precautions. You need to wash your mouth out, and you need to wash your hands. And, says the Yerushalmi, any bread that was on the table while you had milchiks needs to be removed, and you need to bring new bread if now you're switching to fleishiks. The point of the Ramah, which is reassuring for everyone, is that, of course, you're having fleishiks as well. The minhag of milchiks is to have milchiks first. And moreover, it is not an intrinsic exercise, but rather a means towards an end. because the conversion from milchiks to fleishiks will necessitate the doubling over of the amount of bread that you otherwise normally would have had at the table. And that is a zecher to the shtei alechem. Very interesting. Now, I wouldn't go so far as to say that the milchik food on Shavuos is a red herring, because they're not milchik, but nonetheless, it certainly, it takes the emphasis off the intrinsic milchiks per se, and gives us a fascinating zecher for the shtealech. And from the Korbanos HaChag, let's move to another of the names of Shavuos. And it's not a name that's found in the Torah, but it's the name that Chazal use, interestingly. I mean, with so many names in the Torah, Chag HaKatzir and Yom HaBikurim and Chag HaShavuos, what need would there be for another name? And yet we have another name in Chazal, and that is Atzeres. Shavuos is referred to in the parlance of Chazal and the Mishnayos as Atzeres. What is the meaning of Atzeres? Well, some Mefarshim say in a very straightforward way that it once again highlights the fact that as far as the Torah is concerned, for the everyman, right, outside the Beis HaMikdash or in the absence of the Beis HaMikdash, Shavuos would be defined on a Torah level more by what you don't do than what you do, because there are no unique mitzvahs, there is no lulav, there is no matzah, there is the status of Yom Tov, but Yom Tov is defined more passively than actively. It's about, Yom Tov is about Shavisa. And therefore Atzeres, which means to halt, to stop, it's about stopping from and refraining from doing malacha, which really takes a much greater portion of the focus of Shavuos than it does. In fact, those that have the minhag, that they learn the relevant mesechta, or from the relevant mesechta as the Yom Tov comes round, so Pesach and Sukkot, the answer, the choice will be obvious. But when it comes to Shavuos, they learn Maseches Beitzah, because Maseches Beitzah is about Yom Tov, and that's what Shavuos is, really, halachically. It's Yom Tov, with the issues of Muktzah and Malacha and so on and so forth. And that's highlighted by referring to it as Atzeres. It refers, brings out the passive aspect in terms of Isur Malach. But it is possible that there is another concept here behind Shavuos being referred to as Atzeres, and it will present to us an aspect of Shavuos that I believe is fascinating and very, very important, well worthy of our reflection. As we know, Shavuos is quite different than the other two regalim, and in fact, any other significant date in the Torah, in a number of respects, but specifically in that it doesn't have a specific date in the Torah. It isn't the 1st of Tishrei, or the 10th of Tishrei, or the 15th of Nisan. It's 49 days after the second day of Pesach. That's it. The Torah never says that on the sixth day of the third month, or however, whether it's Malay or Chosar, but something. It actually doesn't have its own date. It is determined entirely by Pesach. And what does that tell us about Shavuos? According to some, the message is that from a certain point of view, Shavuos is the final day of Pesach. Pesach is a chag that from a certain perspective is 50 days long, or 51 days long. And therefore, as surely as the Torah doesn't tell you when Shmini Atzeres is, it doesn't give it a date because it's the eighth day from the beginning of Sukkot. So it doesn't tell you when Shavuos is because it's the 50th day from when you start to count the Omer on the second day of Pesach. That is its date. Because you're yet in Pesach. And this is highlighted by the comments of the Ramban in Parshas Emor, where he states that the days of the Omer, to a certain degree, have the characteristic and the status of Chol HaMoed. Ad kedei kach. For us, the very concept of the period of the Omer, due to unfortunate circumstances, has changed completely. And as when we think of the Omer, we have very negative associations because terrible things happened. But the original color of the Omer was that to a degree of extended Chol HaMoed, Ad Kedei Kach. They serve as a link between Pesach and Shavuos. That's what you're counting for. And says Ramban, this aspect of Shavuos is what is being brought out when Chazal refer to Shavuos as Atzeres. Atzeres is the name for the final day of the Chag. Just like on Sukkot, we have Shmini Atzeres, it's how things end up. Shavuos is referred to by Chazal as Atzeres in order for us to be aware of its status to a degree, from a certain point of view, as it is the Atzeres. It's not Shmini Atzeres, it's Chamishim Atzeres, but it's still Atzeres for Pesach. And what's of further interest is that not only is the Ramban discerning within Chazal referring to Shavuos as Atzeres, that it's the final day of Pesach, this idea is to be found in the words of Chazal themselves, and so much so that we find the following in the Medrash Shir HaShirim Rabbah in Parsha Zayin, Siman Beis. Amar Rabbi Shua ben Levi, Re'uya Haisa Atzeres Shel Chag, Shetei Rechoka Chamishim Yom, Keneged Atzeres Shel Pesach. Rabbi Shua ben Levi says in the Medrash there, in other words, not only was it clear to Chazal that Shavuos has the status of the final day of the Chag, but moreover, that is the intuitive duration of a Chag. That there should be the original bout of Chag, and then 7 weeks to ponder and to consider, and then to come back for the culmination. So much so that Rabbi Shua ben Levi says that strictly speaking, Sukkot should have been like Pesach. Shmini Atzeres should have been 50 days after the beginning of Sukkot. Ad Kedei Kach. So everything for us is being reversed. Because the Shmini Atzeres that we know the Atzeres that we know is Shmini Atzeres, and that's how you do it. And that's the end of the Chag, day 8. Then we were introduced to this new idea whereby could it be that Shavuos also has an aspect of Atzeres? If you look in the Medrash, you will see that that's actually the preferred or the optimum template of the relationship of the beginning to the end, with 7 weeks in between. Let it impact on a season of the year. So why is it true that it's not the case, as Rabbi Shua ben Levi? Because the longer you wait after Shavuos, the more you're going to get rained on if you want to come back for another Chag. And that HaTorah Chosa al Yisrael. That's it. In other words, from the beginning of Sukkot, if you wait 7 weeks into Sukkot, so then that's heavy weather to come back to Chag. On Pesach, it's a Mechayah. Everyone's outdoors. So come for Shavuos. And in principle, that's what the Medrash is saying. That would have been the way. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu Rachmanos and expedites things. So the 50 days are compacted into the 8th day. And while if you're already there, before it starts raining, to have your Atzeres. Ad Kedei Kach. And we should know that these words of Chazal, which are further drawing out this characteristic of Shavuos as Atzeres of Pesach, reverberate in the world of Minhag as well. For there are certain Rishonim who codify a certain Minhag, and there are communities that yet maintained this Minhag. The communities in some communities in Morocco and Tunisia, whereby the Minhag there was, on Seder night, they would put a piece of matzah aside, and they would eat it on Shavuos. They saved some of the Seder matzah for Shavuos. And that is well understood in terms of our discussion, that in a sense, with Shavuos is the end. Chasal Sidur Pesach on Shavuos. And perhaps this will explain to us something else. Seder night, of course, in principle, is dominated by the Korban Pesach. And the Korban Pesach is all about celebrating Yetzias Mitzrayim. Seder night is the original night of Hodah, Lehodos. That's really what Sipur Yetzias Mitzrayim is all about. It's the original thanksgiving of the Torah. Now we know that there actually exists a korban for Hodah, for thanksgiving. It's the korban Todah. And there are actually a number of parallels between the korban Pesach, which essentially is a very specialized type of korban Todah. It's the Pesach type of korban Todah. In many respects they're similar, but in certain respects they're the same. Pardon me, in certain respects they're quite distinct. And one of them is mentioned by the Binyan Ariel, Rabbi Yerushalmi in Amsterdam, in that one of the unique aspects of the Korban Todah is it is the only other time that you will have chametz brought in conjunction with the Korban, because you have the 40 loaves of bread, 30 of which are matzah, yet 10 of which are chametz. Of course, if you try and translate that, the full Korban Todah, and represent it in Pesach, you will have a problem, because you can't have chametz on Pesach. But the Binyan Ariel says that this is the explanation. I quoted it for a number of years in the name of the Abarbanel, but having since looked through the Abarbanel, not that I've seen the whole thing, I don't think it's there, but it is to be found in the writings of the Binyan Ariel. This is his peirush of the question of the son in Manishtana, when he says, Shebechol ha-leilos anu ochlim chametz u-matzah. Every night we eat chametz u-matzah, says the Binyan Ariel. I never eat chametz u-matzah, and neither does anybody else. It, perhaps what he means to say is, on every other night, you can eat what you want. You can eat either chametz or matzah. That happens to be true. But the Manishtana has a formula for that. It doesn't say chametz or matzah. It would say bein chametz u bein matzah. Just like it says on every other night, you can eat sitting how you want. Bein yoshvin, bein mesubim. It doesn't say yoshvin u mesubim. No one eats yoshvin u mesubim. It's either one or the other. And the same is true for chametz and matzah. You can either eat, you can do what you want. You can eat chametz or matzah. But the Manishtana isn't saying that. The child isn't saying that. He's saying, Shebechol ha-leilos anu ochlim chametz u-matzah. What does he mean? Is that true? On every other night we eat chametz and matzah? We never do that. Says the Binyan Ariel, if you understand what the child means when he talks about every other night, you will understand that it really is true. We really do eat chametz and matzah on every other night. Namely, the child, and again, we miss context, right? We're missing background. But any child knows in the time of the Beis HaMikdash, he sees everybody getting together, and it has all the makings of a korban todah. He's been to one of them before, and perhaps a few. It's one of those things. Sudas hodah takes the form of a korban todah. And what do you have there? Well, you have a korban. What else do you have? Chametz and matzah. And thus the child says, it's unusual. It seems to have so much in common with a korban todah, but on all other nights, and he means on all other nights, on all other such nights, we eat chametz and matzah. And today, given that association, the chametz is noticeably absent. Halayla zeh kula matzah. The answer is, you can't have chametz on Pesach. But the full answer is that it isn't kula matzah. Halayla hazeh kula matzah. But the korban will yet have its chametz. That is what's supplemented by the shteh lechem on Shavuos. As if to say the full representation of what goes into a korban todah will span from the beginning of Pesach until Shavuos. On Pesach itself, you have the korban plus the matzah, and on Shavuos you have the chametz, and together you have a korban todah. That's a fascinating span, really, a fascinating sweep of this tekufa to understand where the korban todah will be found. And having identified in so many different ways now that there exists to a certain degree the status on Shavuos as the culmination of Pesach, what are we to make of that? Why is it so? The Mefarshim explain that in a sense, Shavuos is the culmination of Pesach, because what happened on Shavuos is the culmination of what happened on Pesach. Pesach is about Zman Chayruseinu, and Chayrus is a concept in Torah that needs to be understood very well. because if it's misunderstood, it is the opposite of Torah. If one has a superficial translation of the word cheirus, which has caused so much grief wherever it goes, that cheirus represents that a person can do pretty much whatever they want, that actually is not consonant with Torah living at all. Cheirus is a person is free from the constraints of them living the way they should be, because they are beholden to other factors and forces. Once a person is released from those and able to engage fully in life the way it should be lived, that when they are free to do that, that's when they're free. Ein lecha ben chorin el misha osek b'Torah. And it really emphasizes a certain point about Pesach, that in a sense Pesach has its own celebration. But I think probably one of the most important things to note about Pesach is the vector of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Because we talk about Yetzias Mitzrayim, and when you talk about something going out, so the notion is from in to out. But the first time HaKadosh Baruch Hu talks to Moshe, which is where he lays the father template of what is to happen, he doesn't talk about taking the Jewish people out of Mitzrayim. He talks about taking the Jewish people up from Mitzrayim. Va'omar a'alcha me'eretz Mitzrayim. The difference between going out of Mitzrayim and going up from Mitzrayim is the difference as to whether you leave to nowhere. And in a sense, you've only defined from where you left. You were inside and now you're outside. Where is that? Nowhere in particular. It's just not inside. And that's the type of freedom that has no ultimate meaning. But the ha'alah from Mitzrayim means that you used to be in Mitzrayim where you were unable to operate as the Jewish people, but now you've been raised up from that. You've been released from those constraints that were holding you down, and you're able to now connect with that which brings you up. That's the aliyah from Mitzrayim. And of course, when we're only ready, that finds its fundamental expression in the giving of the Torah. And therefore, the raising up from Mitzrayim culminates on Shavuos, and that's why Chag HaPesach, to a certain degree, finishes on Shavuos. And in fact, the Vilna Gaon in the Aderes Eliyahu explains in a fascinating way the Aseres Hadibros that we will read on Shavuos morning, Anochi Hashem Elokecha, Asher Hotzeisicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu says, right, I am Hashem, that I have taken you out from Mitzrayim. Now, if we look at that pasuk, which of course we all know in a straightforward way, and we ask the question, when? Hashem presents himself as the one who took us out of Mitzrayim. And when did he do that? Well, you know, 7 weeks ago. I'm the one who took you out 7 weeks ago from Mitzrayim. Here I am, and here is the Torah. And says the Vilna Gaon, no. With the revelation at Sinai, that was the culmination of Yetzias Mitzrayim. Anochi Hashem Elokecha, says HaKadosh Baruch Hu, I'm your God, Asher Etzeisicha, and by connecting now, I have hereby taken you out of Mitzrayim, because now you're really out and where you need to be. And this is so much food for thought, not only for Shavuos, but also for Pesach, to see how on the one hand, Pesach does get 7 days of celebration, but we begin to count instantly. And from a very important point of view, the Chag has not finished until Shavuos, because the concept that it's celebrating hasn't found full expression, hasn't found full realization and full meaning until Matan Torah and Shavuos. With Anochi Hashem Elokecha comes Asher Hotzeisicha Me'eretz Mitzrayim. I'd like to turn our attention now to an aspect of Torah which is, as we will see, is most important. And it begins with a statement in the Talmud that certainly deserves our attention and requires understanding. So it's a well-known statement, I believe, in Maseches Brachos and Daf Zayin. It relates to a concept called Shimusha Shel Torah, L'shamesh, serving Torah. Gedola Shimusha Shel Torah, Yoseh Melimuda, says the Talmud. Serving Torah, that is to say for the student to serve the master, is greater than learning Torah. How do we know this? Well, the Talmud derives it from the pasuk in Melachim, Elisha, Elisha was the disciple of Eliyahu Hanavi, and he is referred to in the pasuk there, Po Elisha ben Shaphat, Asher Yatzak Mayim al Yedei Eliyahu. In other words, here is Elisha, and if there's going to be one thing you can say about him, it's the following. He poured water on Eliyahu's hands. He washed Eliyahu Hanavi's hands. That's it. That is his ultimate qualification. Did he learn something from Eliyahu Hanavi? Probably. Did he learn how to be a Navi? Yes. Of all of his achievements, if they can only mention one, it will be this. He poured water in Eliyahu Navi's hand. Why? Says the Talmud. You see? Gedola Shimusha, serving Torah for Elisha to wash Eliyahu's hands, was greater than anything he learned from him. Ad kedekach. The Chovos HaVavos actually perceives this concept to be found in the Torah itself. Because the ultimate Talmud Rav relationship was Moshe Rabbeinu and Yoshua. And Yoshua is referred to as Misharaso, the servant of Moshe. Parshas Kisisa, U'Misharaso Yoshua ben Nun Na'ar lo yamish bitocha ohel. The pasuk doesn't call him his Talmud, he calls him his Misharis, because that's the greatest distinction for Yoshua, because Gedola Shimusha Yosem Limuda. Serving Torah is greater than learning Torah. Now, the question, of course, is why? And the biur behind the question is, it seems counterintuitive, after all. Why is serving Torah so great? Because this person has learned Torah. So learn Torah yourself! How can serving an ideal be greater than realizing that ideal? That's the problem. Interestingly, we should know that the Vilna Gaon, as quoted by the Maharetz Chayas, explains that when the Talmud says that serving Torah is greater than learning Torah, this very, very startling comment, it does not mean to say that the act of serving Torah is greater than the idea of learning Torah. Rather, it means that serving Torah is a greater way of learning than learning Torah. What does that mean? It means that when one is in close contact with the Rav, when the student is in close contact with the teacher and is mishamish them, he learns from the way the Rav lives. And actions speak louder than words. To see Torah lived is a much more potent and powerful and impactful way of teaching than anything that can be taught in the classroom or in the Beis HaMedrash. Gedola Shimusha. To see it, because then it goes heart to heart, as opposed to learning from a shiur, in which case hopefully it goes from the heart of the Rav to his brain, to his mouth, and the ears, and the mind, and the heart. I mean, if you know Hilchos Shabbos, that's got to be a Kli Chamishi already. Is it still cooking? I don't know. But to see it, it's heart to heart. It goes. It's absorbed experientially. That, says the Vilna Gaon, is Gedola Shimusha Yosem Limud. So that's a very, very important, and of course, needs no outside verification. But interestingly, Rav Kook, in the Sefer Ein Ayah, explains, he steps forward to explain that when the Gemara means that serving Torah is greater than learning Torah, it means what it sounds like it means, in a literal way. Serving is greater than learning. But why? Again, the question comes back. How can it be greater than learning? If it's about serving because he'd learned, so learn yourself, that must be greater. It's interesting that, and Rav Hutner points this out in the Pachad Yitzchak on Shavuos, when we hear the laning on Shavuos morning, it's very interesting to note how of the two prokim, I think it is, Perek Yutes and Perek Kaf, a great deal of space is allotted for a description of the atmosphere of Har Sinai. It's repeated again and again. Kolos Ubrakim, Hahar Ashen, Anan Kulo, the Eish, and the mountain is shaking, and then there's more Kolos Ubrakim, and V'chala Amorim is HaKolos. It's a lot. It's possible that it is almost as much as the content of the Aseret HaDibros themselves. Why would that be? After all, the main thing is the message. Were there kolos? Maybe yes, maybe no. And if yes, but why are they discussed, relatively speaking, at such length? The Bnei Yisrael, we find out in Parshas, well, Vayeschanan, and then in Shoftim, they were very traumatized by the experience of the Aseret Dibros. After the first two, they came to Moshe and they said, we can't do this anymore. We can't hear this anymore. If Hashem speaks to us again, we will die. So you speak to us, because we won't die if you speak to us. It's very interesting, just apart from anything else, that they felt that they were able to do that. In the sense that their role is to receive the Torah. To approach Moshe and ask that it be done in a different way than it seems to be planned, that's quite a thing to suggest. And Moshe wasn't sure what to make of it. But he put it to HaKadosh Baruch Hu, and Hashem says, you know what? It's a good request. Not only is it a fair request, it's a good request. Heitivu asher diberu. They've said a good thing. Because on the contrary, if only they would always be in such fear of my word. It's a good sign. Don't worry, you can take over from here. Heitivu asher diberu. There is a medrash in Vayikra Rabbah which draws a specific association from this word heitivu. As we know, the menorah has two significant events attached to it on a daily basis. In the evening is the lighting of the menorah, and in the morning is what's called Hatovas Haner. Hatovas Haner means that it's cleaned out and then gotten ready for the next day. That's Hatovas Haner. And the way the Torah describes it in Parshas Tetzaveh is Baboker, Baboker, Beheitivo es Haneros. Getting the menorah ready. Heitivo es Haneros. Says the Medrash Vayikra Rabbah, HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, when the Jewish people said to Moshe, we can't hear HaKadosh Baruch Hu anymore. You speak to us. And Hashem said, that was good. Heitivu asher diberu. How good was it? Katovas haneiros. It was menorah good. As it says here, heitivu asher diberu, and there it says, beheitivu es haneiros. And of course, it's a very difficult medrash to understand. What's heitivu asher diberu got to do with atovas haneiros? The Ramban, in his list of mitzvahs, in the Sefer HaMitzvahs, that he wrote accompanying his Perush to this Rambam Sefer HaMitzvahs, where not only does he comment on what the Rambam writes, but he has a comment at the end, a list of mitzvahs that he feels the Rambam forgot. The forgotten mitzvahs. And really what he means to say is that he feels that these should have been in the list, and of course there is a corresponding number of mitzvahs that the Ramban feels the Rambam forgot not to write. Because everyone agrees to 613, but on the details there are certain discrepancies. And one of them is, interestingly, when the Torah says, it sounds like a losase, it says, don't forget, rakishom elecha, ushmor nafshecha ba'od, take great care, pentishkach es advarim, asheru einecha, it's one of the sheish zechiros in the Siddur, at the end of Shacharis. Take great care not to forget Matan Torah. Yom asher amadotech, lefnei Hashem elokecha, b'chorev. And what's very interesting is, number one, the Ramban asserts that that is a Torah prohibition, not to forget, just like there's a mitzvah to remember Yetzias Mitzrayim, as far as Ramban is concerned, there's a prohibition not to forget Matan Torah, Ma'amad HaSinai. But then the Ramban proceeds to ask, why? Why is it so important to remember Ma'amad HaSinai? And that's an interesting question, because I think for us the answer is very simple. I mean, if you already tell me it's a mitzvah, I think I can work out why. And from Matan Torah comes everything. That's the revelation. It's the basis of our connection with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and the basis of Emunah and everything. And amazingly, although all of that is true, for the Ramban, that's not the reason why the Torah said to remember that time. The reason why the Torah says to remember Ma'amad Har Sinai, says Ramban, is to remember what it was like. Because the Jewish people had a certain experience at Ma'amad Har Sinai. It was an awe-inspiring experience. And that's how they received the Torah originally. And you need to remember it, says Ramban, because that's how you need to receive the Torah continually. As surely as the Torah was originally given, in that atmosphere, remember what it was like, because that's what it has to be like when you learn Torah. Ad kedei kach. Because every time one engages, one opens a sefer to learn Torah, essentially it is an emanation of receiving the Torah from Har Sinai. And he needs to be in an appropriate frame of mind. So he should remember what Har Sinai was like, and it should be like that. Ad kedei kach. And therefore, says Rav Huttner, that's how we understand that the Torah speaks at such length about what Mamad Har Sinai was like. Almost as much, if not more, than the contents of the Aseret HaDibros themselves. Because we need to expand our definition of what it means to receive the Torah. Receiving the Torah is now a composite experience, and it has two factors in it, two elements. Number one is the content of Torah, but number two is the atmosphere of receiving the Torah. And if a person only has the content and doesn't have that atmosphere, it's hard to say that that person has received the Torah. Because without the atmosphere, he isn't receiving. He may be contemplating. He may be discoursing. But Kabbalah's HaTorah requires a certain atmosphere. It requires a certain relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu and with His Word. Interestingly, the Bnei Yisrael, without a doubt, reached the apex of their reverence for Torah at the point where they felt HaKadosh Baruch Hu could no longer speak to them. And that is the nth degree of trepidation before HaKadosh Baruch Hu's word. If you feel that if he says one more word to you, you'll die, that means the Torah has your absolute attention. And therefore, says Rav Shlomo Fischer, at that point, HaKadosh Baruch Hu doesn't need to tell them the Aseret HaDibros anymore. He can hand it over to Moshe. The difference between Hashem saying the Aseret HaDibros and Moshe saying them is not in content. Grammatically, it will shift from the first person to the third person, but that's not a change in content. The content is the same. So Moshe, if we say a rather, hopefully not upsetting sentence, Moshe, if they believe Moshe is an emissary from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, he is as capable as presenting the contents of the Aseret HaDibros as HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. But there is no way that he can create the atmosphere that they had experienced when HaKadosh Baruch Hu spoke to them. But after two Dibros, the message was clear as to how seriously they needed to take Torah. So they don't need that anymore. And all they need is the content of the Aseret HaDibros, is HaKadosh Baruch Hu. So I've prepared them. They're ready to receive. And now you can take over. They would say, Lahavdil, in today's parlance, setup is now complete. They are set up to receive Torah. And thus we find an unusual thing. Generally speaking, we would be more particular as to who would actually do something than who would set up for it. Normally, it is a lower level of insistence and sensitivity to set up for something, but then the one for whom it is set up, we'd be very particular. Who is that person? Who is the surgeon? And who is the maestro? Everyone else has been setting up. Anyone can do that. Not anyone can do what they set up for. And lo and behold, with Torah, it was the opposite. There was much more insistence as to who could set them up. Only HaKadosh Baruch Hu could. Moshe couldn't set them up. In terms of now that they are set up, so now Moshe can give me a Aseret HaDibros just like HaKadosh Baruch Hu could. He had it handed over to him. It is highly unusual because it lays greater emphasis on the preparation than it does on that which you're preparing for. We never find anything like that. Or more correctly, we almost never find anything like that. Let us return to the menorah. As we mentioned, the menorah is lit at the night and then prepared the next morning. Now, unless you know the halachas, you would be forgiven for saying that who lights the menorah? The Kohen lights the menorah. That's not actually true. It's practically true, but it's not essentially required. The essential halacha is hadlaka bizar kesheira. A non-Kohen is entitled and eligible to light the menorah. It is true he may have certain issues getting into the Beis Hamikdash if he's not a Kohen. Quite true. Nothing that a 40-foot long candle couldn't solve. If one could only get around the geographical issue, the principle is he could light the menorah. And then comes the hatova, preparation. And here, amazingly, a non-Kohen cannot prepare. Only a Kohen can prepare. Hatovas haneiros for a non-Kohen is posel. It's got to be a Kohen. And lo and behold, we find a similar situation whereby the hatova is preparation for the lighting. But there is more emphasis laid, and we're more particular as to who prepared than we are for who light, because the menorah is the symbol of Torah. And as surely as it was originally, that there was more insistence, because as prepared as you are, that is critical. Whatever happens after that will happen. But as surely as only HaKadosh Baruch Hu could prepare them, not Moshe, but once they're prepared, even Moshe can. So for the menorah, only a Kohen can prepare the lights. Once they're prepared, anyone can light. And that is the Biur, says for Fisher of the Medrash. Heitivu Asher Yibeiru. They've said a good thing. Meaning, I've set them up. Only I could do it, but they're set up, and now you can take over. Kehatovas haneiros. It's exactly like Hatovas haneiros. Ad kedeka. Says Rav Kook, the more we understand that the goal of learning Torah is to impact on the entire person, that the words of Torah should fuse with his being and elevate him as a person. So we understand very clearly that receiving Torah, once again, is comprised of two aspects. His knowledge of Torah and his regard for Torah. His reverence for Torah. Because if he has full knowledge and no reverence, he has almost nothing. It's true if he has only reverence and no knowledge, he also has no Torah. But consider the following, if we place it just in numbers to simplify this, the idea of Rav Kook. If you imagine someone who knows 1,000 pieces of Torah, but his relationship with Torah, his regard for Torah is there to a level of 1, so that's the level to which all of his 1,000 words of Torah will affect him. If he now has a possibility to engage either in adding on another lesson of Torah, lesson number 1001, or perhaps engaging in something that will raise his entire regard for Torah from level 1 to level 2. Sometimes if a person has lahavdil, a certain amount of money in the bank, he can either engage with something which will earn him a little bit more money or double the money that he has. And it's the same time. It's a question of is he turning inwards or outwards. And therefore, says Rav Kook, we understand on a straightforward level that sometimes serving Torah can be greater than learning Torah. Because when a person serves Torah, they are expressing in action, and anything that is expressed in action embeds the value deeper within the person, that because this individual is a Torah, a Talmud Chacham, so he deserves service. It's valuable. When a person expresses that in actions, they reinforce their own appreciation of Torah, and lo and behold, it can be greater than learning Torah. Because the Torah that they have is thus raised by a factor of whatever degree their regard for Torah has been raised. And perhaps it can be said that they will gain more Torah by an act of respect for Torah than they would have had they learnt one more piece of Torah. Ad kedei kach. And these are concepts that are crucial for us. Of course, Shavuos is the time of the year. It is a return to that day of Mamad Har Sinai. It's the day from which it all came. But these are crucial lessons throughout the year. And especially, one doesn't like to bemoan, but it's not a secret, it's unavoidable, the concept of respect for anything, for any value, for any piece of wisdom or guidance, and kal v'chomer for Torah, is a receding art. And certainly this is a time for us who wish to reaffirm our commitment to lead our lives through the Torah for us, and mitzvah Hashem for our children, that to be aware that respect for Torah, which begins with us, is something that ultimately we need to battle for. Because it's not a given anymore. On the contrary, it is something that's only being attacked from all sides, in every possible way, through every possible form of media. And part of Kabbalah Satorah for us is to remember not only the words of the Torah, but also the atmosphere of the Torah, Liros HaSakolos HaSabrokim. And with that, we should have a full Kabbalah Satorah. Wish you all Chag Sameach.